This is the Personal Finance Show.
Hi, I'm Bo Humphreys, and this is the Personal Finance Show. It's October 2017, and I'm at the Cybos Global Financial Services Conference in Toronto. I post something about the conference on Facebook, and my friend Jessica Morehouse comments that she'll be at the conference tomorrow. I had just found out that she would be participating in this payments race. Think of it as the amazing race for money nerds. It turned out that the race was going to start the next day from the conference that I was already attending. I was able to get an interview with all five contestants in the race, Jessica being the only Canadian. All five racers had to make it from Toronto to Las Vegas in a week using different methods of payment. There was Bitcoin, gold, contactless Ring and Apple Pay, cash, and then Jessica had to use a chip and PIN credit card. Maybe you're thinking that's easy. You can pay for everything with a chip and PIN credit card in North America, right? Well, that's what the race is all about. The organizers didn't do a trial run from Toronto to Vegas and try all of those methods to see if it was possible. The race was created to find out if it is possible. So Jessica and the other contestants headed out into the unknown to see whether it would be a breeze or if they would run into obstacles along the way. Jessica joined me a few weeks after the race to tell her side of the story. Okay, Jessica, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back and talking about the payments race. This sounds like it was really fun and also stressful and also a little bit insane. Would you say those things?
Yeah. Like as a, you know, I can't even remember our, you know, initial conversation at Cybos because it was just I was just like out of my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? It was so nice to see a friendly face.
But you couldn't, and you couldn't get in. You were like,
and I couldn't get in. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was messaging you and,
it was
and
like
everybody
Fort Knox.
Be like, let me in. Yeah. It was like Fort Knox. And I'm like, I'm here for the race. They told me to come here. They're like, sorry, without a badge, you're not allowed in. I'm like, but I'm supposed to be here. And then of course it's like, I've never met anyone from the race. I've just been communicating with them over email and phone. So I'm like, oh my gosh, wouldn't this be the craziest ruse? Someone like just made this whole thing.
Yeah, it's all
up.
Just, there is no race. This is the race. It's
yeah,
fake. It's
they
a
just
test.
Wanted to see my face trying to get into this, you know, conference, not getting in. But no, it was such a crazy day. It was lovely meeting all the other racers and the race organizers after, you know, talking with them for a while. And it was kind of cool being like the first and the only North American racer of the payments race. Everyone else was from the UK. So it kind of felt like that's kind of neat, represent, you know? But yeah, overall, like looking back, it was like hands down. I mean, there's only a little bit more time left in 2017, but it has absolutely been like the most memorable, the most adventurous, kind of the coolest thing I've probably done all year.
Well, it's such a unique thing, right? Mm-hmm. So let's start from the beginning, right? So you had chip and PIN.
Yeah.
And what exactly does that mean that you could use to pay for things?
Sure. So yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, well, that's just credit card. That's easy. No,
right.
No.
Yeah.
Basically, I can only use a credit card with a chip on it, which is fine because I'm Canadian and all credit cards have
that
now.
They all do now. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, but whenever I wanted to purchase something, I would actually have to go to, you know, a payment terminal and, you know, stick in my credit card into that kind of credit card slot and type in my PIN. There was no way for me to tap. I couldn't do that. That's called contactless. So that was actually another racer's payment method.
I think Jordan.
Jordan. Yeah. And I couldn't swipe. And that was very difficult because everywhere in America, you can swipe your credit card and pay for whatever you want. But and lots of these places that I went to, stores, restaurants, airports, they even had the, you know, kind of payment terminal where you could stick in your chip card and put in your PIN. But most of them, they're like, oh, sorry, it doesn't work like that. It only accepts swipe. which doesn't make any sense. So they clearly didn't set up their things properly. They don't want to pay whatever extra fee they have in order to accept chip and PIN. So it was a struggle.
is that what you found out? Is it extra cost, or are they just behind the times with the new technology?
No, I think there is an extra cost just to set it up, which is why I think there always kind of will be. If you have, if you kind of make it, you know, very convenient for your customers to kind of pay in lots of different methods, like, you know, contactless, chip and PIN, swipe, whatever, I think there is always some extra kind of cost. I have no idea what it is. But the, you know, idea is if you make it more accessible to, you know, different types of customers with different payment methods, you know, it'll improve your business. It kind of makes sense. I think that is why it is very easy to pay with whatever you want in Canada. But in the States, especially when, even though, like, I honestly was going to major cities in the States, I think a lot of, you know, smaller places, mom and pop shops and whatever, there's like no way that they would, you know, go to all that hassle because it just wasn't, you know, worth it to them.
Well, that's the thing about credit cards in general, right? A lot of people don't realize that the merchant, the mm-hmm. vendor, the retailer pays a lot more for credit card processing. So you go and yep. you swipe or you use your chip and PIN or you're tapping, and it's actually costing the vendor a lot more. So when you go to a retail store and they say, you know, only debit or cash, and you yeah. say, well, that's inconvenient for me. Well, they're making a conscious decision to save money. But like you said, you want to make it easy for anybody to come in and pay. Mm-hmm. And that's what this yeah. whole race was about, right?
Absolutely. And that was kind of like the main point was just to see in different countries, like how do people get around? And it was interesting because what really opened my eyes after the race was, wow, I didn't realize how, I guess, used to I am that, you know, I can kind of go wherever in Canada and pretty much like I'll be good with just my main chip and PIN credit card. It's rare when I go to a place where like, oh, sorry, only debit or only cash or whatever. Usually they're pretty open to all kind of payment methods. So that is a luxury. Honestly, that is a privilege. So when I went to the States and, you know, it was like a struggle to find, you know, a place to eat and that it would accept my payment method, I was just like gobsmacked. It was just insane.
That's crazy. Okay, so let's start from the beginning and go all the way to Vegas. You can just briefly talk about various bits, the ones that were the most important. Otherwise, we could probably be here for a whole couple of hours.
Yeah, but we'd be here for a full 7 days if you want the full recap.
That's right. So, sure. And you have videos, right? People can go and watch all the videos, yeah. the recaps of the days, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah, that was kind of part of the challenge as well, is not only to complete the race and do all the challenges and go to all the checkpoints that we had to go to, but we had a vlog every single day to kind of, well, it was also just like a way for us to document our journeys, which was really cool. But it was really fun for me. It gave me something extra to do because, you know, I was on my own. You don't want to get lonely or anything. So kind of like filming yourself and having this kind of camera with you, you almost felt like you were, I don't know, not so alone. I don't know. That's just my perspective on it. So I actually kind of liked filming. It gave me kind of like a little more sense of purpose instead of just desperation.
It was like there was another person with you,
yeah,
even though it was
felt
just
like
you.
A little cameraman following you or something like that, which
the internet.
Is actually quite nice. Yeah, exactly.
The future internet is the people we're going to see this as witnesses to this
exactly.
occasion.
Exactly. And it was just cool for people to also see what I specifically went through, because some people probably wouldn't even like believe like what I went through. So yeah, so that's all on my YouTube channel, jessicamorehouse.com/YouTube is where you can find all that stuff. But so the race started with us all converging at Cybos in Toronto. So that was nice for me because I live in Toronto. So I just had to like take the subway there. But once we were there, we were given a little bit more details about what to expect in the race. And then we were all given basically, you know, all of us were handed a piece of paper that had our first challenge on it. And then we were kind of like, there was like a bit of a, all right, get, you know, ready, get set, go. And then everyone just ran away. And I was like, and I didn't run away because I'm like, whoa, I'm going to read this paper because I don't even know why I'm running.
That's right.
And so on my piece of paper, it said, my first challenge was to go to Cincinnati in Ohio. And I didn't even know, like, this is how bad my like American geography is. Had no idea where Cincinnati was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't know it was in Ohio. I had to go to Cincinnati. I had to buy an Ohio hat. I had to said Ohio on it. And then I had to go to a place in downtown Cincinnati called Fountain Square. And then I had to purchase lunch. And then I had to basically take a picture and film me with all of this, these elements to complete that challenge.
So wearing, like, okay, wearing the hat or
I had to wear the hat. I had to eat lunch. I had to be in Fountain Square in Cincinnati and document that I did it.
And all of it course, purchased with chip and pin.
Yes, yeah. I can only purchase everything in order to complete that challenge with chip and pin. So I'm like, okay, sure. And so I started to panic because I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never done anything like this. I'm a pre-planner when it comes to travel. Yeah. Like I plan the heck out of it like months in advance. So doing something on the fly like this. And for me too, I was, well, besides, I guess, Amelie, we were the only two that had never done anything like this. Whereas Jordan, Ash, and Stu had done the previous race. So they kind of had a little bit of an idea of what to do, what to expect, how to take care of things. So,
and that was just in June, right?
Yeah, that was recently.
So it wasn't
that
even
was back
like
in
a
June.
Year ago. It was,
no,
it was
I can't
more
imagine.
Recently.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine trying to do another race just a few months after the first race. But yeah, that one was a bit different because it was only 3 days and they only had one challenge, which was to get to London to Copenhagen. So it wasn't as crazy as this one. But still, they had a little bit of a leg up in terms of that. So first, I'm like, okay, well, I'll call a travel agent. Maybe they can help me out, book a flight. I could use chip and pin. I called like 3 travel agents. They all said, you know, first off, a flight would cost like $500 because it's so last minute, even though it's like a really short flight. Mm-hmm. And also, sorry, yeah, no, if you wanted to come to our office and pay chip and pin, we don't accept chip and pin. We only accept swipe, which was ridiculous because I was still in Canada.
Yeah,
at
you're
that point.
You're at home where you yeah. you have this privilege of being able to
exactly.
use chip and pin everywhere.
Yeah. So that was shocking. So I made my way to Union Station because honestly, I've never taken a bus anywhere. But I think they come out of Union Station. I don't know. the GO Train bus does.
Yes.
Regular Greyhound buses do not. There's a Greyhound station kind of near Yonge and Dundas Square.
Yeah, Bay and Dundas.
So a nice lady from Union Square or Union Station told me to go there. Took a cab because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm wasting so much time running around. They took chip and pin, so that was nice. Went to Greyhound, bought a bus ticket to Cincinnati, of course. And then I'm like, wait, how long is this bus? And
how
it was
long?
Like 14 hours.
Oh, no.
Yeah, something like that. 12 hours, 14 hours. Yeah, awful. Like I left at 7:30 p.m. in Toronto and I got to Cincinnati at 10 a.m.
So, you know, a lot of people listening have probably been on a Greyhound. And
yeah.
are really feeling for you right now because mm-hmm. 14 hours on a Greyhound bus to Cincinnati.
And it wasn't just like one bus, just like relax. It's like there was basically it was from Toronto to Buffalo. And then there was like a 3-hour layover at like midnight. And
crossing
then from
the
Buffalo.
Border.
Yeah. Crossing the border, then Buffalo to Cleveland, then Cleveland to Columbus, then Columbus to Dayton, then Dayton to
what?
Cincinnati.
I was like, you're not done yet?
Yeah, I went for a while. Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, $500 would be the cost of the flight.
Yeah.
What was your budget?
Oh, yeah. So we were all given a budget of 1,500 pounds. That converts to like 2,000 USD or 2,500 Canadian. So I was very conscious of that. And that's kind of why I decided to take the bus also. I could have just gone to the airport and tried to buy a ticket there with chip and pin. I'm sure it would have been fine. But I didn't want to spend like, you know, a good chunk of my budget with one trip because I knew there's still 7 more days. We were kind of, you know, hinted at that we would need to make our ways to the Grand Canyon. So I knew I needed to kind of, you know, make my way over there. So I didn't want to spend all my money. So the bus, I think itself cost me maybe like $150
okay.
total.
I mean, you got to get there somehow. So it's like,
yeah.
It sounds like it would be the cheapest way other than hitchhiking, which would have been
yeah.
very dangerous, I'm sure.
Yeah,
and
no.
almost impossible to get your in a timely manner. I'm
exactly.
Sure,
so right? yeah, the bus was definitely the best way. But I mean, after this trip, I'm like, I don't think I'm ever taking Greyhound again.
Oh no.
I mean, I didn't really realize what the whole, it's like a whole different world there. Like I'm telling you, some of the bus stations we went to, I'm like, what is going on right now? And to be fair, it's like we were getting there at like midnight, 4 a.m. So it's a different situation than daytime, I'm sure.
Very.
But yeah, like some of these bus stops were like actually scary. And I'm so thankful that for most of the trip, I was with the other racer. So we kind of, you know, hung out together, protected each other, because there is no way I would do that as a, you know, a woman on my own. There's just no way. It's just so not safe.
Well, traveling overnight is on a Greyhound is not the safest thing. But just think, you know, in the future when someone's like, hey, you want to take a 2-hour Greyhound to London? You'll be like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done it.
If it's a short bus trip, that's fine.
It's easy, right?
Yeah, but still, for me, I always even talk about, in terms of spending, there's, you know, don't feel bad about spending because I'm very frugal by nature, but I've kind of come to, you know, the viewpoint of, you know, it's okay to spend money on your values. Well, I value comfort and convenience. So I don't think I'll always spend more for like a convenient flight somewhere than a cheaper bus somewhere.
And then, buy Kraft dinner when you get to the destination, right?
Yeah.
Instead of going out for a steak.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You all went to somewhere in Ohio, but not to the same city.
Yeah, we
so
all went
Columbus
to different places.
Columbus and Cleveland.
Yeah, there's a few people that went to, Jordan and Ash, I think, went to Cleveland. Stu went to Columbus with Emily. And then I was the only one with Cincinnati, which was the furthest destination.
Interesting. Okay, so you got there. You got your Ohio hat. You got the photo.
I got my Ohio hat, went to CVS. They accepted chip and pin, luckily. I had a real tough time trying to find food. And at that point, I hadn't slept in like 12 hours.
Yeah.
Like I tried to sleep on the bus, but I wasn't. So I found a hotel really close by, the Westin. Not the cheapest hotel, but I was so tired. I'm like, I do not care. And got a hotel room, took a nap, then came outside, went to Subway. They accepted chip and pin and then completed my challenge and then went back to my hotel to the thing is, once you are kind of done, you still have to spend time to edit all of the footage you've done
and send
it to the team and then upload it yourself. So it wasn't like I could really relax.
Wow. It's just go, 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 right?
It was go, go, go for 7 days.
So what was the next challenge then after that?
The next challenge we got in the morning, and I was able to accomplish it that morning, which is great. It was to send a piece of mail or a letter to someone in Singapore.
Okay, that's random.
So yeah, super random, but it's because this is called the Money 2020 Payments Race. Money 2020, the conference will be taking place in Singapore next year.
I see.
Yeah. And so that was kind of the whole thinking of that. So I just went on Facebook. I'm like, hey, does anyone know someone that lives in Singapore? And a lot of people were like, oh yeah, I know someone. So this guy who was actually, I know through a friend who was a year below me in film school, he knew someone who lived in Singapore. So he connected me with that person, mailed him something. I got help from the hotel staff, and then I was on my way. I just needed to find a ride to the airport.
And you could pay for all that through your hotel, I suppose?
She was nice enough to just do it for me. She had the envelope. I took like a piece of paper, wrote something on it, and she said she'd mail it after work for me. So she
really?
Actually,
she
was really nice.
Cheap. I mean, I'm sure it's not that expensive if you're just mailing a piece of paper.
I don't know.
But yeah, that was super nice. You know, I'm very interested in how much kindness was, especially, you know, if you, I'll be talking to Amelie as well.
Yeah.
And she, I think she had to rely on a little bit more kindness because of the
she
lack
did,
of
yeah.
of
for
Bitcoin.
Me, I didn't want to kind of, like, I asked for favors when I needed it to, but I really did want to try my best to use my payment method because it's like, it isn't like, oh, I only have gold or Bitcoin where no one accepts that, where you really do have to rely on the kindness of strangers. It's like, well, most people be like, well, can't you just use your credit card? So I tried my best to actually use that. But in terms of trying to get to the airport, I knew there wasn't going to be any method, you know, that would accept chip and pin. So when I kind of got out there, I saw this nice looking man who was clearly waiting for his car. And I'm like, are you going to the airport? He's like, yeah. I'm like, can I get a ride? He's like,
nice.
And I had like my camera. I told him the whole spiel. He's like, yeah, sure. That's fine. So I got a free ride with him. But then, of course, like once I got to the airport, like I discovered soon, not one airline in the, I think it was like the Cincinnati/Northern Kentucky airport. It was weird. It was actually in Kentucky.
That is strange. I thought that was very strange when you said that.
Their airport is actually in Kentucky. it's so bizarre. So I'm like, okay. But yeah, not one airline or one food stall accepted chip and pin. So I was starving. I was freaking out. Again, I went to Facebook to see if anyone could help me. And luckily I found Kate Flanders, the blogger, who's also a friend of mine.
That's so nice.
she bought me a flight to Denver, Colorado. And that is allowed in the rules as long as you pay that person back with your payment method, which I did because we were roommates at FinCon after.
Did they tell you this at the beginning? They told you these rules?
Yeah, there's some workarounds because they knew. It's like, well, we can't, you know, you can't starve and be like stranded somewhere. So there is some kind of workarounds.
Like, I'll buy you a hat at this store next door to the restaurant.
Yeah, and I did actually try to get a stranger to buy me a flight, and I was going to buy him something at the electronics store because they accepted chip and pin, but it fell through. It was going to be it would have been so epic, but yeah, he was trying to buy me a flight with some of his points, but he didn't have enough. And he was a musician just traveling. He was kind of cash strapped. He was waiting for a check, so he couldn't buy me a flight, but he was gonna.
So we have Wi-Fi on flights. We have the ability to buy pretty much anything with a swipe credit card. But we still don't have chip and pin in airports.
I know. Starbucks didn't even accept it. It was unreal. So luckily got a flight, went through security, and I'm like, okay, there's got to be some place that has, you know, a food place that accepts chip and pin. I went to this one and he's like, no, like literally I've been working here for years. Not one place accepts chip and pin. I'm like, will you give me some free food?
Please,
he's like,
no.
No. He's like, no.
I'm what
like,
a jerk.
I'm so hungry. I know. I'm like, I'm so hungry.
He's just doing his job, I guess.
But, I know. And so, yeah, the only place there that was someplace I could hang out and had some sort of food was there's this AAA members area.
Okay.
They always have kind of, you know, members areas
like a lounge,
in the airports.
Right?
I think, yeah, it's a lounge. And I paid $40. They accepted chip and pin and just hung out there for like 6 hours. And all they had for like food was like apples, carrots, chips, beer, and nothing substantial.
This is because you're at the Cincinnati, Kentucky airport.
Yeah.
Because if you would have paid $40 to get into, say, you know, one in Tel Aviv, you would be like eating a buffet, which would
probably. So that's, all they had was like cup of soup kind of thing.
Oh man. So that's not good. Okay. So you got on the flight that you
yeah
you
I figured traded, that out. Got on my flight.
Traded it was with a
flight
Kate Flanders.
There's a stopover in Chicago, and then from Chicago to Denver. Happily, I got off. I had like an hour layover, and McDonald's accepted chip and pin. So I finally stuffed my face. Because I was literally dying.
Wow.
Yeah, but I felt immediately, you know,
on
and McDonald's is so good at first, and then 30 minutes later, you're like, oh, that was a mistake.
On the flight, though, you had some snacks on the flight?
There was nothing on the flight, no. But like, basically, I just survived on like a protein bar and chips throughout the day.
Oh man!
And then at night, I had McDonald's for dinner. And,
yes, and then you're right; it is a bit of regrettable, especially if you eat a lot of it. And you know, in the States, McDonald's is slightly different. It really is. I find it because we're not used to it. And they make things different. Everything's from different places, too.
Yeah.
And the ingredients and all of the regulations. So I think it's different food and we're not used to it.
Yeah, so, it could be it. Yeah, my stomach was not happy with me. But it filled my belly, gave me enough energy to make it to Denver. And then from Denver, I got a ride with another blogger friend, Michelle, from Michelle's Money Hungry, who picked me up from kind of the train station in downtown Denver. And she drove me to this Lady Heidi's house, who was nice enough to let me sleep in her basement.
So this is all connections that you had. You kind of prearranged
this. Well, I didn't
actually
know Heidi. She was following the race, reached out to the race organizer to say, hey, I live in Denver. If anyone wants a place to crash, they can crash in my place. So I'm like, yeah, I'll stay at the stranger's house.
That's amazing. So do you have a goal? Do you have a next task in Denver then?
Yeah, I think it was fairly easy. What was it? I think that day it was just you had to film yourself talking about you know, one of your past failures, how you learned from it. So it was like super easy. Okay, I didn't have to find anything. I didn't have to go anywhere. So I did that pretty easily. You know, after, you know, Heidi was nice enough to like take me out for lunch and feed me, I met up with my friend Michelle. We got myself a place to stay for that night, and just kind of like she just toured me around Denver, which was lovely.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, day three was awesome. Day four was also fairly awesome because, again, I don't know what the challenge for that day was. I think it was another easy one. I can't remember. But basically, I booked my flight to Las Vegas for that night because I knew, okay, from Vegas, then I will go to the Grand. Oh, maybe that was it. Like the next, you know, thing was get yourself to the Grand
Just
Canyon.
Get to the Grand Canyon. Okay.
And to get that flight to Las Vegas and, you know, a trip to the Grand Canyon, I got, again, another blogger friend. I relied heavily on my blogger friends, Barry Choi from Money We Have. He bought me a flight to Las Vegas from Denver, which only cost $40, which is
Barry,
hilarious.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
And what would
yeah.
you, what'd you get for Barry?
I don't know. I haven't paid him back yet.
Well, just, are you following
I was
going to
buy him whatever he needs. He has a new baby. So I'm like, I'll buy you whatever you want for your baby.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome of Barry.
Yeah. Yeah. So he bought me a flight to Vegas. He also bought me a bus trip to the Grand Canyon. So basically I was all covered. So, you know, that day, cause I had a nighttime flight, me and Michelle just, she you know, drove me around to Red Rocks in Colorado, which was very cool. Kind of reminded me of like the Flintstones. And then she, we drove to Boulder, Colorado, really cute town, and, you know, went out for brunch and just like had a really good time. And then I flew to Las Vegas.
Okay. And, so Grand Canyon,
So the next day, I got to Las Vegas at like midnight, and I got a free ride from the guy who was sat next to me on the flight to give me a ride to my hotel.
Cause you just told your story.
I told my story.
You're basically telling your story as you go.
Yeah.
And people are responding well to it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think they're just like, oh, this poor girl, she looks really tired and hungry, which is true. He gave me a free ride, like, you know, just like hopped into his cab and it was kind of on the way. He was going to the strip anyway. I was staying at the, and I also got a hotel, which I was able to pre-book, because they did take chip and pin. So that was nice.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So that was a win. Stayed at the Mirage, which is actually a fairly nice hotel. But then I get, you know, to the hotel at like midnight, I fall asleep, and then I have to wake up 5 a.m. to catch my 16-hour bus trip to the Grand Canyon.
Oh man.
another like mistake in my part.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Greyhound again?
It wasn't a Greyhound.
It was like
a specific tour bus. And like overall, like it was absolutely the best, way to see the Grand Canyon. Everyone else was smarter than me and took a helicopter ride. To be fair though, if I had done that, I know I would have actually gone over budget because I did spend more than most of these people. They lived on buses the whole time. I took flights and I stayed at hotels
because okay.
I needed to.
Yeah.
So actually this was probably like the cheapest, best method for me, but because I took so long, cause you know, it was great seeing the Grand Canyon, but we were actually delayed 2 hours getting back to Las Vegas because there is an accident on the road and we had to like turn back and go a different route. And that added 2 hours onto our journey. So it should have actually been a 14-hour, I believe, journey, but it was 16 hours or something like that. So because of that, you know, basically after we did that last challenge, going to Grand Canyon, taking a selfie with it in the background, we had to go to the Venetian where the Money 2020 conference was, go to Finastra's booth in the convention center. And then that was kind of like the finish line, but I was the last one to get there. So I knew, okay, I definitely didn't win. I don't know what place I got, but I definitely didn't win. So that was a bit like, that was a bit heartbreaking because I was like in the lead throughout the whole race. But
yeah.
That one last decision kind of,
so it was really, comes down to the last thing. And
it did. But, I know. So I'm kicking myself for that, but whatever.
Winning, there is no prize for this, right?
I think there's like
prestige.
A trophy. You get the glory, you get the prestige, and I think there is a trophy. But yeah, you don't get like a big cash prize or anything like that. It was more just like, you just like when you're like literally just doing the race for 7 days near the end, you're like, yeah, I want to win.
I guess you do, right? But yeah. The idea, the main premise is, can this be done, right? It's not like you were able to buy everything with chip and pin, but you were able to use your network and to me it says hey, you know, there's a benefit in having a big social network and and being kind to strangers and having negotiation skills, right? People don't realize the value of all this stuff, and you know, when you need it, it comes in handy. Like I guess Emily got there first then.
She got there first because she took a helicopter ride to the Grand Canyon and I guess was like the first one to kind of finish her ride because Stu also took a helicopter ride, but maybe his was just a little bit later in the day. And Ash, he went to the Grand Canyon actually a day early, which was really funny because then our race organizer was like, it doesn't count. You have to be there on the Monday.
No.
You can't be there. So what he did was you'll probably find out more of the story from him, but I know he went there and he stayed there past midnight. So it did flow into the next day. And then I guess he took a bus, or I don't know how he got back to Las Vegas, but I do remember hearing that he had to sleep in a Starbucks.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'll get that story from him
for
sure.
Oh God, the poor guy. So in the end, I did not win. I got fourth place, right above a contactless Jordan. But they were only fifth because he had to pull out of the race. He couldn't finish it. So really, I'm sort of last. But
oh wow, I'll get that story from Jordan too.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, so the race is done and you're just decompressing.
The race is done. I got a full, like, real meal of, like, proper food. That was glorious. I got to shower. I got to take, like, an epic nap. I got to stay in the Venetian. That was lovely. It was, like, a huge suite. So I just got to kind of finally decompress and get and not feel like I'm in race mode. And it was funny because right after, because I'm a crazy person, I flew to Dallas, Texas to go to FinCon. As you know,
I saw
were there.
Yeah.
You saw me there. And it was funny. There was like one night where I like woke up in a sweat being like, oh my God, do I have to check out of this hotel soon? Am I still in the race? And I'm like, oh my God, no, I'm not.
You look, when I saw you, I think you were just coming down for registration, I think. You look
probably.
Well, it was early in the morning, but you were so exhausted looking. Like
I was absolutely like, out of my mind.
I'm ready to just take a nap, but you had a panel to be on that day, I think, or then maybe
Why. Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten up that early. But yeah, I had to register, and then I had a panel. I was going to go to Kate Flanders' panel because she was my roommate, so I had to go there. And I think hers was at like 8:30 or something crazy early, and then mine was at 10:30. Wow. So I had to be up. Yeah. What a crazy experience. Yeah. So those 2 weeks were literally like the craziest of my life. Absolutely. Like in this year, like insane.
So, I was talking about sort of lessons learned. Do you have any specific things that you learned or about yourself
definitely.
Or like, you know, a lesson
definitely.
To share with people?
Yeah. Like the main reason I said yes to this race, and I told a lot of people and they're like, oh, I'd never do that. Or, oh, I got that email and I thought it was spam. I wanted to do it because it scared me and not scared me in like, oh my gosh, this sounds dangerous. I'm like, it scared me in that. I'm like, that sounds like it'll really make me do stuff that make me feel uncomfortable. But that also excited me because I know from past experience when I usually put myself in a situation where I have to, you know, there's a bit of fight or flight. You have to really test yourself and see, you know, what you'll do. I've always grown out of that. I mean, you know, a big thing for me was like moving from Vancouver to Toronto, no job, no friends, no nothing with my husband and making it work. And that literally has changed our lives. Like we're different people, we're better people, we're stronger. And so I knew this would be kind of another kind of sense of that. So I did it mainly for personal growth. I knew I would get a ton out of it personally. It would be a great way to test my, you know, resilience and also like just me now being self-employed. I work from home. I'm pretty comfortable. I got a cushy gig. I don't have to leave my house sometimes. So I don't really do anything too adventurous or crazy. So, and I also am a huge fan of The Amazing Race. So this kind of seemed like The Amazing Race. So I'm like, okay, it sounds terrifying. I need to do it. I need to prove to myself that I am capable and I can do it because this is literally something I would never do. It's very outside of my comfort zone. So that's why I did it. And in the end, yeah, that's exactly what I got out of it. I felt stronger, more powerful, more confident, independent. I felt like, oh yeah, I got this. Whatever I used to worry about a few months ago, little things, literally doesn't matter. It definitely put things into perspective on like what's important and just you kind of get a bigger picture about, you know, getting out of your little bubble and seeing the world in a different set of eyes. So
I think everyone should do that. And you got a great story out of it too. And,
really good story. So, and I made some really great friends from all the other racers.
Well, yeah, the racers and just people you meet along the way and you learn about the kindness of strangers. And people can go to your YouTube channel. People can go to jessicamorehouse.com, right?
Yeah.
And find out more about your whole, if they want to watch the whole detail, would you have one video per day?
So I've got one video per day and then I just put out a race and review video where I kind of go through some things I haven't shared and just like my final thoughts on the race in general.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show and for being the first of the five. I hope I get all five. No one's refused me yet. I haven't got a hold of Amelie yet, so she's the only one who can actually refuse me. But everyone else is agreed to talk to me about their part of the race and their payment method and their challenges. So thanks for being the first one, and I'll talk to you again soon. Okay.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
In case you're wondering, Jessica did eventually pay Barry back. If you want all the details about Jessica's payment race journey, you can find them at jessicamorehouse.com/YouTube. Next week on The Personal Finance Show, I have another payments racer, Emily Arras, who actually won the race using only Bitcoin as a method of payment. How did she pull this off? You'll have to tune in next week to find out. If you enjoy listening to The Personal Finance Show, please show your support by subscribing and leaving a review on iTunes. No time for a review? Just leave me a star rating. It takes 2 seconds on iTunes. InvestWisely.ca is where you can find all of the show notes and links, and of course, all of my blog posts. I'd love to hear from you, so please feel free to send me an email at bo@investwisely.ca.